Welcome, this is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com on this 9th day of September 2011, just 2 days before the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And today we are talking once again to our regular monthly guest, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster at InForecaster.com. Bob Chapman, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you once again for taking the time to talk with us.
I love it. I love doing it, especially early in the morning, which is a disadvantage to you because you're doing it late at night.
Well, it's not so bad. It's only 9 p.m. here right now, so I can handle that.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Well, we saw this past evening the man who calls himself President of the United States speaking about a jobs program. And I think the bottom line really is it's another political gamut, smoke and mirrors, and they don't really know how they're going to raise the money to offset $500 billion in spending in round figures. And at the same time, I think it's ludicrous that we have this enabling panel, which has until November, to come up with cuts of a trillion or whatever the number is, $1.3 trillion. And you have one group working to cut and the other group working to increase. And, of course, the main target for the enabling group called the Super Conference, that's 12 people plus the president, you have them bypassing Congress, number one. Number two, the real intent is to chop up Social Security and Medicare. So it's my feeling that if they do that, let's say they deduct $500 billion from the two of them combined, that money's just going to move sideways over to take care of the jobs program that this illustrious leader is bringing us to. And at the same time, we've set the precedent of bypassing Congress, having legislation drafted and then presented to Congress, which cannot be changed, amended, debated, filibustered, even discussed. You either vote up or down, and that's it. And I call it the enabling group because it's almost an exact replica of what the National Socialist Party had passed in 1933. It was called the Enabling Act in German, and this is what gave Adolf Hitler dictatorial power. And you've all got to keep that in mind because this is what they're after, not only the cuts and destruction of Social Security and Medicare, so they can get you rid of useless eaters, but also to neutralize, to take the power away from Congress, people who would just wander around doing virtually nothing. Because all new bills will be presented to this enabling group, this super Congress, before they're presented to the House and the Senate. It's a total abrogation of the U.S. Constitution, but everybody, mostly in Washington, thinks that the Constitution is a useless piece of paper, and we should go do what we want to do, sort of like situation ethics. But anyway, you can't stand by and look objectively at what's been done, or proposed, I should say, in the world of creating jobs. Some of the items in there, like credits on plant and equipment, they've already had that. And what the major corporations did is they went out and they bought labor-saving equipment. Now, I laugh at it, but it's not funny because they're not saving jobs. They're destroying jobs by using, we'll call them robots. And I don't think that's the answer to anything. Giving tax breaks to small business, that certainly has value, because those small businesses and part of the medium-sized businesses create about 70% of the jobs. And another thing is, which wasn't discussed, is having the banks take the $2 trillion that they have and start making loans, which they've cut back 30% in the last 3 years, making loans to small and medium-sized businesses if they need them or if they want them, because that in turn will create jobs. And I noticed that in the last few weeks, money has been coming out of the Federal Reserve and going back to the banks, which tells me they may very well have that underway. And that would be a way of creating jobs by spending more money by small and medium-sized firms. That is a positive. But we don't know for sure what their plan is. We've seen money come over. Will it continue? Another thing they've got in their back pocket was the result of the secret meeting that was held in the Oval Office by 20 or 30 CEOs of transnational conglomerates. And what they want is another deal, the deal being the same as they got before, 5 years ago, from Congress, for creating new jobs. They were allowed to bring money back to the United States that was sitting in the Cayman Islands, which had been made. It was tax-free under American law, which is lunacy. And that money was brought back, and it was supposed to create jobs. Well, it didn't create any jobs. They took the money. They bought their stocks on the exchange, ran up the prices, blew out their options, and made billions of dollars. Part of the deal was, instead of paying 35% in taxation, they paid 5.25%, which cost the U.S. government, the taxpayer, about $300 billion. Now, this deal, they want to do again. Only this time, they want to bring back $2.2 trillion. The taxes that will be lost at 5.25% will be close to $800 billion. Now, we need those taxes. As good Americans, as good corporate Americans, they should be bringing that money back and paying the 35%. Everybody else in America who runs a country company is paying 35% or so. So why shouldn't they? They're not doing us any favors. If we had a Congress that was for the people, what they would be doing right now is passing a law forcing them to bring the money back. So these are some of the ways that could be used, that might be used, in ameliorating the problems of employment short term. Another thing I noticed, that they're going to give billions of dollars to cities and towns and municipalities so they won't lay people off. I've never heard anything so incredible in my life. They're supposed to be cutting back because they spent far too much money that they didn't have. And so that's not a very good idea.
Well, that's putting it mildly. I mean, it's stupid. It's self-contradictory. It makes no sense from one perspective. I guess if you are coming from the perspective that they're actually trying to right the economy and to get things back on track. But as you pointed out earlier, and I think it's important to restate that all of these things, all of the smoke and mirrors and deck chairs on the Titanic and all of the things we see going on in the economy really only make sense from the perspective that all of these moves are really towards the end goal of destroying, abrogating, and completely getting rid of the Constitution and replacing that with a more dictatorial form of government. And I think we've been seeing that general arc playing out for decades now, but it's really becoming apparent with each step they're taking. We just get a little bit further and further into that dictatorial hole.
Well, the control of Congress and the executive office really began in earnest about the time that the Federal Reserve Act and the Internal Revenue Acts were passed in 1913. And we saw, everybody thinks that FDR was a socialist or a communist or whatever. FDR was a fascist. And in time, people will take a look at that and think about it and learn about it. But seriously, taking down the American government really happened during the 1930s and everything since then. Keynesian economics is nothing but corporatist, fascist economics. And it's not a far step from being a Fabian socialist, which he was in the group in London so many years ago, actually at the turn of the century. The Webbs and Shaw and that whole group of people who created an atmosphere which was really keeping the large corporations in control and subsidizing them, and at the same time bringing socialism into play so they could be melded later into corporatist fascism. This fascism is just another form of socialism, but yet the corporations are the ones who really run things. And so that has been going on for a long time. And it took me a long time to catch on what they were up to. Very devious, very well thought out. You know, you call somebody one thing and they're really another. And anyway, we're at the coming close to the apex of that process, and that is world government. And this is why the economies, particularly in Europe and England and the United States, are being brought down, because they want to bring the people in the leading countries of the world to their knees economically and financially so that they can control them and get them, like 1984, the Orwellian control of people and the enslavement of mankind. That's really what this is all about. And much to my chagrin, I hear almost nobody talking about it. Do they not understand, or are they terrified?
Well, that's a good question. But just on the note of Keynes, we shouldn't forget that he was also a ranking member of the British Eugenics Society, and I think that goes back again to what you were saying earlier about the drive to kill off people in large numbers, which again is part of what all of this is aimed at.
When you're right about that, they cut Medicare. People are not going to be able to pay for the prescriptions. They're not going to get anything elective as far as surgery is concerned. And there will be a waiting line like there is under National Health in England and in Canada, where people die because there's not enough doctors and facilities available from time to time. That doesn't all happen always, but it happens from time to time that people die because it's not there for them to be able to be fixed up, we'll call it. But in this program, they have a panel in the Obama medical care plan, which starts in 2014. And no matter what the doctor says, the doctor is told how the patient will be treated. And if the doctor argues, they fine him. The second time he argues, they put him in jail. So they want complete dictatorial power over the individual in America to be able to tell them whether you're going to be treated or not. And if Bob Chapman has some disease, and over the next 10 years, it's going to cost the government $500,000 a year to treat Mr. Chapman, that's $5 million. I mean, that's a lot of money. And they're going to say, Mr. Chapman, we're not going to treat you because you're a useless eater. And we have other younger people who we have to treat who are still workers. So you go home and die.
And you know, the most annoying thing about this, to me personally, is that what you've just said is absolutely completely true, and yet will undoubtedly be taken out of context by those on the left who just want to support Obama mindlessly. and ridiculed, oh, that's silly, no one's trying to do that. And yet they'll sit down and listen to a speech by Bill Gates in which he says precisely the same thing, that we're coming to a point where we have to decide whether to employ teachers or let grandma live for another year. And they'll think that sounds perfectly reasonable, even though it's exactly what you just said. If it doesn't come from the mouth of someone that they respect, then, and put in a way that they want to follow, then they'll just say, oh, it doesn't exist.
Well, you know, Gates has put his money into a foundation, along with Mr. Buffett. And these people have their positions only because they were chosen by the Illuminati. And they are members. And when they die, all the money that they've made will funnel back into the things that the Illuminati once done. Now, this foundation, if you look into it, they were formed in 1824, I think the year was. And not this particular one, but the concept of this foundation. And they completely, this charitable foundation, they completely controlled by the people who put the money in the first place. So it's not like you form a charitable foundation and you give money from that foundation to Hospital A or the Salvation Army, or et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't done that way. And what they're using it for is subtly, because the public doesn't understand what they're up to or the power that they have. And they will use these foundations and these monies to do to people what they want to do to them. A good example is the inoculation program in Africa. They're killing people. That's what they're doing. And Gates came out and said almost that. You have this Gladysil, which was used by law in Texas, and little girls are dying because of a failed experiment in keeping them from getting sexually transmitted diseases. And this is a law put in by Governor Rick Perry, is running for the presidency. Do we really want that guy in there who does those kind of things? Plus his horrible personal life of bisexuality. I mean, I'd rather not have a bisexual in the Oval Office either. Everybody can have their own choice, but I don't think that's a very good idea from my point of view. But these are the kind of things that go on in these foundations. I mean, you can switch over to the Rockefeller Foundation, which has done many, many things, but one of the things that interests you now is they're the ones who put together the program to take everybody's retirement by government and exchange it for government-guaranteed annuities. Now, this is a bankrupt government we're dealing with here. They put that program together. They financed it starting in 1994. They turned it over to the New School, which is a communist-run organization and has been since the Second World War. And they presented it to Congress. It's sitting there. And you can go on and on. I still have a copy of the Carnegie Foundation of International Peace, their invasion of South Africa that they put together. They tried to get all those copies back, so they couldn't. I still have a copy. It was written in 63, perhaps. And all of these things that these foundations have done, they're just fronts for doing what the Illuminists want to do, as Jim pointed out.
Right. Well, indeed. Well, maybe you can speak a little further to the extent to which the foundations actually operate in the economy, because I think people understand to a certain extent that these foundations wield literally billions and billions and billions of dollars each, and there are many of them out there. But I don't think people really understand the extent to which they're able to shape society through it, and even like specific examples like the Rockefellers and their funding of the Green Revolution in Africa in the 60s and the Gene Revolution these days. And it's basically a big monopoly game, because they get to come in with their funds and prop up these types of new technologies and business models, which they own the companies, which then come along and supply all of the technology and goods for it. So it's a complete con game, a shell game. But I think most people still don't really understand how it operates.
Well, it operates just the way you said, and very often the people that they control in Congress pass legislation which marries the foundation with the government expediency, and they get what they want accomplished. And the public never knows about it. They don't even know what these foundations do. It's a way of transferring wealth as well, because the people who behind the scenes, and we don't have Rockefeller running the foundation as such, but the people behind the scenes are doing exactly what the Rockefellers want to do, and the Rockefellers can retain control of the foundation and the money in perpetuity. It's horrible. It's another way of controlling society and government.
Tax exempt, no less.
And actually, they should be dismantled. They should pay taxes on the money. The money goes to the federal government. What's left over goes back to the Rockefellers.
Well, but I mean, it seems like we're up against big foundations working in cahoots with big government and big corporations and big banks. And it seems to me that the answer must be to go small. I mean, we must have a way of decentralizing this control and power that's grown over us, because it seems to me that's exactly what it is we're fighting.
Well, I've seen this in business as well as in government and foundations. Every time I see a consolidation, I see trouble. I see waste. And when things operate in separate units, we'll call it, let's take a power company in all of the facets of delivering power to people. You have a main office where the main decisions are made, and then you have these outlying offices that might process payments for power, regulations, all of the nitty-gritty of what makes a power company work. And it's funny, I picked that. Southern California and part of Arizona lost their power last night. I don't know why yet, but I just saw the headline this morning. But the point is, it doesn't work well, because Southern California Edison went upside down. And the reason why was the consolidation of power. And you see it in industry as well as in government. And when people operate and are responsible for their unit, it's much more important, and it works much better.
Absolutely. Well, let's switch tracks a little bit. Let's go on to gold, because I know you wrote about it in the Forecaster this week, and you're talking about how the incredible swings we've seen lately have to be obviously just blatantly the result of manipulation by the president's financial working group on financial matters. Is that right? But let's address the concerns of people out there who might look at those drastic downswings and be hesitant to put their money into gold at this point. What do you say about long-term, looking into next year and the years after? Where is gold going, and why should people be invested in gold?
Well, first of all, you have to believe that the markets are manipulated. It's in your face if you're watching it all. So that has to be a given. You have to understand that your government and the people who control it, they are manipulating every market 24/7, and it's legal. And the working group in financial markets, which is directed supposedly by the president, which of course it's not, was an executive order signed by Ronald Reagan in August of 1988 after the collapse in the stock market on October the 19th, 1987. And that was the excuse. Anyway, that said, going back to what we just witnessed, we saw gold drop $200 when it did. I put out the word to our subscribers as well as people who are listening on these different radio stations that I'm on that you should buy. And I said that gold and silver go right back up again where they were, which they did. In fact, it went a little bit higher in the case of gold. And then they came in and attacked again. And they knocked it down to 800. And I said, it's another buying opportunity. It's going to run back right back up again. And it did. now that the president has made a speech today, they're attacking again, and they're having a hard time doing it. Gold has been off somewhere between $350 and $25 an ounce on Thursday, starting at 3 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And I watch the markets. And being an ex-trader, I look for the rhythm of the markets. And the markets are an art form. There's nothing scientific about them. Those people who are using algorithms only have them work because their 16 computers are right next to the New York Stock Exchange computer, and they're front-running every trade in nanoseconds. That's how they can get away with it. But the market is an art form, and everything is fundamental in life. Charts, waves, cycles, you can see, but you can see them afterwards. So the question is, where is gold going? I believe that very shortly we'll see between $2,000 and $22 an ounce, and I think silver will move up and start to challenge the $50 high that it had in April. I think that by the end of February that we could see $3,000 to $3,200 in gold and $70, $80 in silver, maybe more. And I say that for two reasons. Well, three. First of all, if you take real inflation since 1980, when gold was $850 an ounce, you will find that today's inflation should have gold at $8,000 an ounce. And number two, when gold was taken down the first time in May, it tested, in the case of gold, the lows four times, and it tested the lows in silver eight times. Once or twice is normal. Four times gives you a pretty good, stable support level. Eight times, very unusual. What happened in the past when these kind of things happened? From the level at which they were tested, over a six-month period, they usually double. Now, that was from June to December. I added on 2 months because I know that historically that gold and silver do well during January and February. So I took it up to March 1 to give myself a little leeway. And so those are the basic fundamentals as to why I think gold and silver will follow those precepts. Silver would be $70 an ounce based on that, and gold would be $3,000 to $3,200. And what totally convinced me is when J.P. Morgan Chase came out, and now, mind you, they're short gold and silver, and they're short silver in a big way, along with HSBC, GS, and Citigroup. And for them to come out and say gold was going to $2,500 a month, announced by the end of the year, could only be to me, in my psychology of thinking, that they think gold's going higher and they want to stop it at $2,500. That's what they're up to. So these estimates are coming from someone who has spent more than a half a century doing this. Second of all, I'm not guessing. And third of all, I've got a deep background in this. And I can be wrong, there's no question, but I'm usually right. And so based upon that, you should be buying gold and silver coins, bullion, and shares. And if you don't do that, you're not going to be able to protect your wealth, because sooner or later, the stock market will go down and the bond market bubble will burst. When that is, and when it will happen, I don't know, because they keep on throwing wood on the fire or coals on the fire. And that is stimulus one, two, and maybe three, which we're being presented with right now, an increase of $477 billion in spending for jobs. That's stimulus. Or QE1, 2, and now we're getting QE3. they don't have QE3, the whole thing collapses. And that's going to continue. So it would tend to keep the market up, the stock market up, to some point. Now, I don't know where that point is yet. So it'll trade in a range. And the same thing with the bond market, which is being controlled by the U.S. government, but more so by the Federal Reserve. And that leaves you the only option, which is commodities and gold and silver. Commodity market's very difficult to play because 85% of the people who go into the commodity market lose money. And the same is true with options, incidentally, with the exception of the writers. And so this is my basis for looking for those kinds of things to happen. And, of course, if we had some catalytic event like Greece defaulting, which I think they will, that could send gold up very quickly. And if the others in that group, the other five countries, if they would default as well, that would certainly add fuel to the fire as well. And so there's a lot of untoward things out there. There's a lot of things that could cause extra special problems other than what we're talking about, which is basic economic and financial fundamentals.
Indeed. Well, I know it's difficult. Everyone has a different portfolio and they would need one-to-one coaching. But as a general rule of thumb, what would you say in terms of the ratio of paper to physical gold or silver that people should have in their portfolio?
Well, to start off with, I'm prejudiced. So you have to understand that. I've been involved in gold and silver shares for almost 53 years, directly and indirectly. I was a broker for almost 30 years on my own firm, was the largest gold silver stock broker in the world. I got a lot of experience in that area, more than anybody in the world, probably. I only can think of one other fellow who's been at it as long as I have. And last time I saw him, he didn't look very good. But anyway, I recommend 30% in gold and silver coins or bullion, split evenly. 70% in the shares. Why? Number one, the shares are vastly underpriced because of suppression by the United States government and hedge funds. That suppression ended 2 weeks ago, or at least I think so. And you're going to start to see mutual funds, money managers now starting to buy these stocks. Not only the ones that produce and make money, sometimes lots of money, but the smaller companies as well. And yes, their costs are going to go up with inflation, and inflation's 11.2%, but so isn't gold going up. And that's going to far more than offset the cost of doing business. And if you look back in history, during the 1930s, the stock market fell 90%. Gold and silver shares went up over 500%. And the price of gold doubled arbitrarily via government. During the inflationary recession of 77 to 81, the average gold and silver share went up 40 times more than bullion did. Now, if we come anywhere near the historical perspective, and let's say gold and silver shares outperform gold bullion by 5 times, that's an awful lot more money. So the real money historically has been made in the shares, but you have to have good guidance. In the last several days, I just had a stock go from 45 cents to $1.50. Now, those kind of things happen. Back in 1976, I was buying East Rand Proprietary and Durban Deep at 25 cents a share. We sold them in 1980 at $52 and $55 respectively. And they were marginal mines at that time, highly leveraged with low grade. But that's where the action is. And some people say, well, all you have is a certificate in the company. Well, you own the company. You're part owner, no matter what. Your name is on the ledger, whether it's in the company or at the DTC. You know, I know how the system works. And we have these gonifs running around telling us that, oh, all these certificates aren't going to be worth anything. That is not true. They're selling something, whether it's coins or bullion or DVDs or newsletters. That's what they're up to. I answer so many letters, and I answer them all. These foundless accusations, like gold's going to be confiscated by coin dealers. It's not going to be confiscated. Who would bother to take the time to confiscate something that less than 1% of the population owned? If you told me they're going to go out and confiscate all the guns, I could believe that. There's 450 million of them in the country. That's believable. And so you got to do your homework. You got to have guidance from someone who knows what they're doing. That's why we have the International Forecaster. We recommend stocks. They've all done splendidly. People are making gobs of money. Well, the people in the stock market are going up and down, back and forth, not getting anywhere. And inflation's eating their lunch alive. And in the bond market, if you own 90-day paper, you're not getting a yield. And inflation's 11.2% at the moment. That's a pretty dumb bet. And so where you want to be to preserve your wealth is in gold and silver. Prices are going to go far beyond $3,000 and $70 or $80. Believe me.
Well, I must admit, goo gobs of money certainly sounds attractive, and I want to get into the forecaster and how people can learn more about that in a moment. But just first, I'd like to get your take on a rather interesting headline from yesterday, September 8th, from CNBC: a 50-year bond, what one Fed option could look like. And it says, "quote With the Federal Reserve widely expected later this month to unveil the latest weapon in its easing arsenal, expectations are ranging from Operation Twist, a variation called Operation Torque, to a 50-year." Treasury bond. A 50-year bond? While the idea seems radical even for a central bank carrying a $2.8 trillion balance sheet, the idea of the Fed going that far out on the yield curve and a desire to stimulate the economy is drawing market chatter. The purpose of the bond would be to extend the duration of the Fed's otherwise short-term debt portfolio. In theory, it would take the pressure off the central bank from having to roll over its debt on a continual basis. End quote. So, Bob, what do you think about that story? Where is that coming from?
It's called inflation. Because if the short end of the curve starts to accumulate a higher yield because attention is being directed upon long-term paper, which is anything from 10 years onward, and you're talking about a $50 year bond, they would concentrate in laying the debt out over a longer period of time, extending the responsibility, are again kicking the can down the road. And on the short end, interest rates would have to go up because they would be paying attention to the long end. And that's real interest rates. Don't expect that the Federal Reserve is going to jump up and say, oh, we're going to let interest rates go up. They've already told us they're going to keep them down for at least 2 years. I say it's inevitable they're going to keep them down as long as they can. But it would tend to put upward pressure in interest rates. Now, for those who are retirees who would want to buy bonds and not get no yield or a quarter of a percent or 1%, maybe they'd get 2 or 3. That would be good for them. But they're still facing what I'm looking for this year is 14% real inflation. They're still giant losers. And so you got to dispel that. The game that's being played is musical chairs. And it's not going to work. They want to extend until they have to have a war. And probably in the Middle East. And that's why the Israelis are so frustrated, because they want to go and attack Iran and take it over and rule the Middle East. And they're being kept from doing that. But the point here is it isn't going to work. And if you read the comments by Ellerand, who is I think he's the CEO of PIMCO, or an officer of PIMCO. He, in essence, said the same thing.
On the note of Israel and what's happening in the Middle East, any thoughts on the Palestine situation? Palestinian representatives are bidding for full UN membership starting this month. And what do you think about that story? Where do you think that's going?
Well, the Israelis' leadership, not the people, the leadership. And, you know, the people are as befuddled there as they are in any other country. They've said if such a thing is passed, that they'll invade. They have to, or this is what they say. And you've got to remember that Netanyahu not only worked for the Mossad, but he also worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. So whatever plan they've got is the American plan. They are dependent on America, especially with their connections and the money that flows from the United States government, as well as individuals in America, into Israel. They've got to listen. They can't unilaterally run off and invade somebody. And so the plans will come from Washington, and they will come from the people behind the scenes who control everything. And they'll be allowed to be let loose when the Illuminists want them let loose. And will that be 6 months from now or 6 years from now? I don't know, and nobody else does. And I think the planners don't know either. They know it's going to happen. They know that they're going to need it. Is economic and financial chaos reigns throughout the world, and that will come in time. And another thing, too, here, everybody's saying, well, it's going to happen next week or next month or on October the 14th or on January the 27th, and all of these crazy, idiotic projections. This is going to take years. And there could be violent disruptions in between that they never expect, which could bring it to a head in 6 months or a year. We don't know. But going on what we do know and what their plan is, with the exception of warfare, then it's going to take several years.
Well, that's right. I have to second you on that, because I think a lot of people tend to get trapped in some sort of mentality where everything's going to happen tomorrow and martial law is going to be declared and everything's going to go down in one day. But I don't think it will work like that. It tends to be a long, slow progression, which unfortunately plays into their hands, because obviously people are more likely to go along with it in a long, slow, gradual progression, as the Fabian socialists argued. But it does raise the specter as we sit here 2 days before the anniversary of 9/11, thinking if there was another 9/11 type event to happen today, I mean, that would be obviously a game changer, and who knows what the ramifications of something like that would be. So once again, people have to be prepared for the unexpected, but still also prepared for the long term as well. And the best way to do that is to get yourself prepared and armed with the knowledge that you need to survive in these incredibly trying economic times. And on that note, of course, Bob Chapman does run one of the most important newsletters out there, if not the biggest, but certainly an extremely influential newsletter called The International Forecaster. Tell us about the newsletter.
Well, first of all, I'm very happy that it's the most plagiarized newspaper and newsletter in the world, especially in Washington. People in the State Department tell me the minute it's released, everybody who wants it within the Beltway has it. And every consulate and all of the American embassies throughout the world have it immediately. So I'm kind of proud about that, because they're listening to my ideas, whether they agree or not. The International Forecast is about business, finance, economics, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish on Wednesdays and Saturdays by email, usually runs around 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the Internet. Everything you need to know each week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to the International Forecaster.com, the International, FORECASTER.com, or you can go to www.INTFORECASTER.com, INTFORECASTER.com, or if you'd like to ask a question, and we answer everyone, if you'd like a copy of either, and if you'd like a copy of our latest releases on gold and silver shares, all you have to do is email Bob, B-O-B, at INTFORECASTER.com, Bob at INTFORECASTER.com. And for those of you who would like to call toll-free, that number is 877-479-8178. 877-479-8178. You can get a free copy of either. And for those of you who want to become subscribers, they have a special offering there, a free one-year subscription. The offer that they're making is terrific. Take advantage of it.
So, Bob, do you think we should let the cat out of the bag on our upcoming plans?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. All right.
And well, I'll tell you why these people will plan on it's very important. Absolutely, you should mention it, because we have people, millions of them, who listen to every single broadcast. I don't know how they do it, but they do it.
You have a huge following, that's true.
I better have continuity is all I can say.
Well, let me preface this by saying I get a lot of feedback from the interviews that we do, and all of it is extremely positive. I one of the guests that I routinely get positive feedback about, and so I'm by positive feedback and popular demand, and because it is so informative, I'm happy to announce that as of next month, we'll be doing every Monday at I don't know exactly what time it'll be released on the website, but Monday, sometime around noonish, I would imagine. It'll be coming out, and so people can look forward to that, a weekly broadcast interview with Bob Chapman and myself. So Bob, I thank you once again for your time, and I'm looking very much forward to doing that on a weekly basis.
I am overjoyed, and I'm looking forward to it, and we're going to discuss a lot of things other than business and finance, and it'll be a sort of a skull session, as we used to call it in college, where everybody gets together and thinks out the answers. And so I'm very happy that you're able to do that. You've got a wonderful program, and it's going to get bigger and bigger.
Well, as long as it's not a skull and bones session, I'll be happy. Bob Chapman, thank you, as always, for taking the time to talk with us today.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.